To call the June 4th, 2020 Planning and Zoning Commission to order. Ms. Burns, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Stanton. Mr. Strodman.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
Here.
Ms. Russell.
Here.
Mr. Tui.
Here.
I am here. Ms. Carroll.
Here.
Ms. Lowe.
Here.
Mr. McMahon.
Present.
We have eight. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Mr. Zenner, are there any adjustments or additions to the agenda?
No, there are not, ma'am.
Move to approve.
Thank you, Ms. Russell. Second by Mr. McMahon. I'll take a thumbs up approval on that. Unanimous. Everyone should have received a copy of the May 21st, 2020 meeting minutes. Were there any changes or edits to those meeting minutes? Seeing none?
Move to approve.
Second.
Thank you. Moved by Ms. Russell, second by Mr. Stanton. I'll take a thumbs up approval.
Man.
Sorry.
I will inform Commissioner Stanton of his second.
You were thinking about who wasn't here.
He often does that. Second by Mr. McMahon. I'll take a thumbs up approval on the meeting minutes. Unanimous. That brings us to subdivisions. Our first case of the evening is 85-2020, a request by Van Maitre Law Firm on behalf of Donna Jean Armstrong Unit Trust for approval of a 5-lot final major plat on property zoned MC, mixed-use corridor, to be known as Battle Crossing, Plat 1, and an associated design adjustment to sections 29-5.1 F3 of the Unified Development Code to allow a new lot line through a structure. The 16.04-acre subject site is located at the southwest corner of Clark Lane and St. Charles Road. This item was tabled at the May 21st, 2020 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you stated, this is a request for a final major plat and also for design adjustment regarding a lot line through structure. This is for a piece of property that was recently reviewed by Planning and Zoning a few months ago for a permanent zoning case and a preliminary plat. Tonight they are proposing to final plat 5 of the 6 lots around that preliminary. This case did have a public information meeting on March 17 prior to the stay-at-home order, and it was advertised for a public hearing due to the design adjustment. This is the kind of oblique aerial of the site. You'll see Clark Lane on the north on it of the site and St. Charles to the east, so it's near the intersection of the I-70 interchange. And currently vacant pending development. This is a screenshot of the preliminary that was approved. The 5 lots that are in question tonight for the major plat are the ones outlined in red to the right, closest to the intersection of St. Charles and Clark. And you can see the lot line locations there, and we can state that the final plat is generally consistent with what was shown on the preliminary. The one reason we're here tonight is actually to discuss the design adjustment, which is the public hearing portion of this. In the course of platting this and designing the site, the owner applicant has a site plan that would facilitate the necessity to have a lot line through an existing parking lot on the site. That specific lot line would be between lot 4 and 5, seen here with the blue dash line. Some other portions in the plat, though, as well. In addition to creating the 5 lots, there are access easements that will be granted. Those will actually take place once those are recorded, and they will be updated before it goes to City Council. That is the brown shaded area, so that's to ensure access to lots 1, 2, and 3. Due to access management, they won't have direct access from right-of-way of Clark or St. Charles, so they are required to provide access easements to ensure access to those from and within and through lot 4. Additional right-of-ways also being dedicated along Clark and St. Charles, which is shown in the shaded light blue. To come back to the design adjustment for the lot line, that lot line again is shown here on the screen. You can see the parking lot area and parking spaces that will be bisected by that lot line. Reviewing the standards for design adjustment, staff found no reason to find that this request did not meet the standards for a design adjustment. The location of that, in these cases, you know, we look for a reasonable location. So these are bisecting spaces, so you'll have a clear delineation of those spaces between each potential owner in the future, but basically between lot 4 and lot 5, so it's in a reasonable location. It should not be detrimental to the development of the site. Again, as stated, you know, 5-lot subdivision with access and the lot line issue that we discussed previously. So basically, with that being said, staff is recommending approval of the final major plat and approval of the design adjustment for 29.5.1F3 for the lot line over structure. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Before we move on to staff questions, I would like to ask any commissioners who has had any ex parte prior to this meeting to please disclose that now, so we all have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. I see none. Are there any questions for staff? None. Good job, Mr. Smith. Since there's no staff questions, we're going to open the floor to public comments. If anyone has any comments that they would like to share, please come forward to the podium and give your name and address for the record. We do restrict you to 6 minutes if you're speaking for a group and 3 minutes if you're speaking individually.
Thank you. Robert Hollis, 1103 East Broadway, here on behalf of the applicant. Also here is a representative of the engineer as well as the applicant. Contract purchaser, we're here to answer questions to the extent that you have any.
Any questions for the speaker? Good job, Mr. Hollis.
Thank you.
Any other speakers? Seeing none, we will close public comment. Commission discussion. Mr. McMahon?
Seeing none of my fellow commissioners stepping up to ask any questions at this time, and that's fantastic also. I would like to make a motion. In the matter of case 8520-20 with associated design adjustment, I move to approve.
Second.
Second by Ms. Rushing. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? I see none. Ms. Burns, may we have a roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Strodeman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes, ma'am.
8-0, motion carries.
Thank you. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That brings us to our public hearings for the evening. Our first case is case 90-2020. A request by Derek Domitroch on behalf of Central Columbia Properties LLC to rezone approximately 0.06 acres from RMF multifamily dwelling district to R2 two-family dwelling district to facilitate construction of a single-family home. The vacant lot is addressed 811 North 6th Street and is zoned RMF and FPO floodplain overlay. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The request for you today is for a zoning map amendment located approximately 100 feet south of Wilkes Boulevard and North 6th Street. We sent out advanced public info postcards in lieu of the public information meeting postcards due to the stay-at-home order. It was advertised in the Columbia Tribune and sent out property letters. You did receive one comment. That was pertaining to rezoning, which they were supportive of, and a request for a reduced front yard setback that would be consistent with the historical appearance of the neighborhood. In reviewing this, staff found that there's a provision for median front yard setback calculation with an exception that new setbacks cannot be less than 25 feet. With RMF or R2, both front yard setbacks are 25 feet, and this wouldn't apply. To seek a reduced setback here, the applicant would need to request via the Board of Adjustment a waiver from the required 25-foot setback. Moving on from that, the reason we're here today is the lot is not a legal lot per the UDC, and it's vacant due to a building fire. Rezoning in this case would confer legal lot status per the UDC that provides a provision for R2 zoning. This would also not require the need to replat, which would constrain the building footprint even further, and we'll see that in the next slide. Also to mention, since we're talking about the front yard setback, is that the floodplain overlay extends approximately 23 feet into the front yard. While that's not, the floodplain overlay isn't being altered today and it's not really part of the discussion, it would come into play after this, and when seeking a building permit, because they'd have to seek a floodplain development permit. Looking specifically at the footprint, what you see in orange is the developable area available given multifamily zoning, and what you see in teal is what's to be gained from the rezoning to R2. Currently, it allows for 525 square feet, and the rezoning would allow for 892 square feet. So there's a considerable addition here that the applicant would gain. The nature of the lot and size prohibits physically prohibits a duplex or multifamily development without lot consolidation. And lot consolidation also would require a replat as well. And looking at the surrounding area, those properties are also zoned RMF, but the current character consists of single-family dwellings, which is consistent with what the intent of the development is here. Furthermore, to the south, towards the end of the street, there are two properties that were rezoned to R1 as well. Let me go back real quick. Downzoning does have the potential for both positive and negative impacts in residential neighborhoods and the built environment. On one hand, these actions can permit the preservation of affordable single-family homes in neighborhoods and offer protections against multifamily redevelopment where existing stormwater and sewer infrastructure may be at capacity. On the other hand, reducing the potential for additional units where investment has been made in infrastructure, it's possible that reduced infill development densities may be too low to support transit service within walkable areas. Looking here, though, the rezoning is unlikely to have any impact on the available housing or density. Considering this, staff believes that the R2 zoning would facilitate development contextually consistent with existing land use of the neighborhood, not be a detriment to density, and promote infill development. And we recommend the zoning map amendment from RMF to R2. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Before we move to staff questions, I would like to ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte prior to this meeting related to this case to please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. Mr. McMahon.
A point of clarity, not necessarily a conflict. As you know, I received a communication from the property owner south of this lot, which I transmitted to Mr. Zenner, which he transmitted to you. And that was the extent, though I do know this person, that was the extent of my communication with that property owner.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Ms. Carroll?
I actually received an identical communication, and I responded to Pat. Mike sent his around, forwarded his to Pat before I did. I have no additional information than you do, and I alerted Pat to that as well.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Mr. McMahon.
If we are done, I do have a question for staff if we're at that juncture.
I'm just going to turn my head and make sure there was no one raising their hand on this side. I see no further. Yes, we can move on to questions for staff. Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome.
Thank you.
My house is in this picture, as a matter of fact, and I am familiar with this lot. A technical point, moving forward, and if this is a Pat question or an engineer question, that's fine. If they build up that front yard, it doesn't violate the flood zone problem. Is that correct?
Correct. However, the entire property is still regulated as if it's in the floodplain.
As is in the floodplain. And looking at the maps, I'm correct when I say that the property directly to the north, and I think the ones directly to the west of that property, are on a PCC, are they not, for sewer? It's private sewer just north of them. That was a yellow line on the map, and I'm assuming with that, rather than the green line, which we normally have.
I'm not sure. I would defer to Pat.
It looked as if this, although I remember when there was a house on there. Thank you, Mr. Zinner. There was a house on there. I'm assuming it had sewer, and I don't know if it was connected to the city sewer, which runs in front of this property, or if it was connected to the property north of it, which is a private sewer. And all of, given the neighborhood and my familiar with the neighborhood, all of these things could be true.
And you're referring to the utility map that was included within the packet, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Ironically, what is shown here is interesting because it shows that the private common collector goes in front of the property immediately to the north of the subject site on Wilkes, with that public sewer to the in 6th Street, but it doesn't show a connection.
And that's why I'm asking that question.
Given what is currently shown on the map, if I were to have to make an educated guess, which is what I am going to offer you here.
Thank you, sir.
Is that the home immediately to the north on the corner of Wilkes and North 6th is actually connected to the city sewer, given that it does not have a connection point to that common collector. That may or may not be right because I haven't done an actual GIS evaluation of that.
This neighborhood, and for you guys, future reference when we get to this, our neighborhood is fraught with mixed connections, no connections, that type of thing. I am correct in assuming that as this property develops, and that's what I think what the map said, this will be connected to the city sewer.
That would be correct because that is the sewer that immediately lies in front of the property.
I just wanted to verify that point. Thank you very much, Mr. Zinner.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for staff? Seeing none, we will open the floor to public comment. If anyone has any public comments they would like to share with the commission, please come forward. I see none, so we will close public comment. Commission discussion. Mr. McMahon.
I will be supporting it because we need every affordable home we can get in the neighborhood and in the city. As to our friend's communication concern about the setback, I think that's valid to a point. You will note, if you look at some of those connector maps, as you go south, the houses get closer and closer and closer to the road. Mara's house, the one directly south, she does have like a 27-foot setback. But if you go further to the south, Ms. Fowler's house is well within the 25. Councilperson Fowler's house. I don't have a problem with the setback, is what I'm saying, if they're going to violate. This lot is, I walk by here all the time. This lot is tiny, poquito, like fit in this room, kind of small. So I just wanted to say that, and that's, and I will be voting yes on this. Thank you.
Ms. Russell.
Oh, if there are no other comments, I was going to make a motion.
Ms. Carroll, if you can just raise your hand above the ledge. Thank you. Ms. Carroll.
Help. Easy to support. For me, this down zone is easy to support given the immediate need for affordable housing and the fact that this lot could not support an RMF in the near future and the need for affordable housing is now. And therefore, I do plan to support that. I would be amenable to a setback that kept with the line, but I don't believe that function of voting is before us right now, to my understanding. And so based on the rest of the pertinent information for this case, I would support it. That is all.
Ms. Russell.
I'll make a motion. In the case of 90-2020, I move to approve the R2 zoning map amendment.
Second.
Mr. McMahon seconded that. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? I see none. Ms. Burns, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Toohey.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Carroll.
Yes.
Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes, ma'am.
8-0, motion carries.
Thank you. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That brings us to case 99-2020, a request by Brush and Associates on behalf of Tom and Pam Carden to rezone three parcels from PD Plan Development to MC Mixed Use Corridor. The property is addressed 1206 Coates Street and is the location of Tom's Imports. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may, Ms. Chairman. As you can see here from the aerial photography, this is Tom's Imports, corner of southeast corner of Coates and North Boulevard. We're looking at roughly 1.13 acres of currently PD zoned land being sought to be rezoned to MC, mixed use commercial or mixed use corridor. Again, we did advanced public information postcards due to the stay at home order and our COVID protocols. 22 notices were sent out in relationship to that advance notice, and then we advertised for this public hearing this evening on 519 with the same 22 property owners being informed of tonight's meeting. This is a request in order to remove the imports, Tom's Imports, from the planned zoning designation that was applied to this property and last amended in 2011 to allow for a building expansion. Here in the oblique aerial, you can probably make out almost three distinct structures that exist on the property. The original buildings here that were part of the original CP request back when this was rezoned, and then the addition in 2011 that was CP to add for additional automobile repair facilities. The CP statement of intent, as pointed out in the staff report, really provided for generally C1 uses with a very specific provision for an auto parts store repair facility. And that is currently how the property is being used today. It is my understanding that the vehicles here within the back parking lot are used partially for parts for service vehicles, import vehicles within, and that aerial is probably over-exaggerating the total number of vehicles in the rear yard, which is a fully enclosed, fenced-in area at this point. Also, since the application has been submitted, additional augmentary landscaping and screening has been added along the southern property line of the site itself. Main building is about a 9,000 square foot structure. The secondary building, which was added in 2011, was 3,600 square feet. It was zoned in 99 with an updated statement of intent, as I said, in 2011 to reflect the expansion of the primary structure onto a third lot. That two lots are out on the corner of North at Coates, and then the additional lot on Coates was added. The permitted uses, residential, public service, office, personal services, and some intermediate commercials, plus the additional use, which was only allowed in C3, at the time, but was added per the CP request, an automobile repair shop. And that was principally the amendments made in 2011, added the building, but the repair shop use was already there. Some uses within the C1 zoning district are restricted. So the statement of intent took into account that we were trying to craft a narrow plan district on this property at the time. Drive-throughs, alcoholic beverage sales, restaurants, banks, and boarding houses were left out of the typical C1 uses that you would normally find. The SOI was somewhat restrictive, hence the reason why we are before the Planning and Zoning Commission this evening. We're looking to relax the conditions that exist on this property by opening it up to a standard MC zoning classification, restricted such in that we only allowed, per the PD plan, construction totaling just under 13,000 square feet, maximum height of 24 feet, and required a percentage of open space equal to 15%, which is not uncommon in our planned districts or commercial developments and is consistent actually with today's minimum standards for open space on a commercial parcel anywhere within the city. We also had added hours of operation restrictions. If the zoning is approved this evening as requested, all MC commercial uses would be permitted on the site subject to our code. As we have talked in the past, as it relates to these types of requests to come out of restricted plan zoning into more permissive open zoning, a number of the revisions that were made as part of our UDC in 2017, such as neighborhood protection standards, step down and setback increases, all are designed to mitigate the potential impacts of these inconsistent and sometimes competitive land uses within the existing land use environment. As you will see underneath the picture here, basically the proposed uses were identified, and as Ms. Bacon prepared this, these were the conditions that were added as a part of the 2011 request as we encroached further down towards single-family development to the south of the additional property that was added. This is the zoning map that exists today from the land use perspective. Part of the purpose behind the request is not only to address the limitations, but it's to permit flexibilities to the applicant. Similar, Mr. Cardone has been before us most recently on his Providence Road project. Many of the concerns that he had with that project are attached also to this in the same way. The opportunity to be able to have more marketability, given where our current economic conditions are, is seen as very valuable at this point. The zoning and land use context, which is the purpose for the zoning map here, shows a mixed land use context. We have commercial zoning to the north and to the west. We have vacant commercial, neighborhood commercial zoning to the east. You have residential development to the south and a little bit further to the south of that, and catty corner from the property eastward is our Cullimore Cottages project for the City of Columbia. The other interesting factor here, as we looked at what has happened since this property was amended in 2011 to today, what changes have really occurred? Well, one, we've adopted the UDC. That was 2017. In 2018, I believe, if it was not early 19, how time flies when we're having fun, we adopted the Loop Corridor Plan, and the Loop Corridor Plan identifies this particular area as being potentially in a redevelopment area that would allow for greater flexibility in its building and its lot standards to further fulfill the general obligations of improving the overall loop corridor as part of its CID. So those are your two major changes that have occurred. The land use pattern, unfortunately, really has not changed significantly in the years that this project has existed in this location. And it has been operated as the auto repair facility. It's expanded, but the rest of the land use hasn't really changed. As pointed out, automobile repair was not permitted in the C1, nor is it permitted in the MN today. And in staff's evaluation of the project, we were looking at, well, how can we potentially mitigate impacts that could potentially be brought onto the site by expanding its uses from a restricted plan zone to an open zoning classification while still trying to address the issues that the applicant has as a legally operating automobile repair facility, which is not permitted in an MN zoning classification, which would be the large parking lot that is immediately to the east of this. How can we reconcile that? Well, we really can't. The only way that an automobile repair facility would actually be permitted on this property would be if it were zoned MC. Otherwise, it would, in heavy automobile repair, actually is a conditional use. So you'd still in the MN, and you'd still have an issue at that point, or it's not permitted at all in the MN. So MC is really the one route by which to make sure that there's parity between the existing primary use of the property and what would potentially be its use in the future. There has been no indication by the applicant, and he is here this evening to speak to this directly, that there's any intent of redeveloping this site in the immediate future. As I've indicated, the land use pattern hasn't really changed over the course of time since 2011 to today, but we have had regulatory advancements. And we have a plan now, which in the absence of a neighborhood plan really serves as the neighborhood plan for this particular area, identifying this as potentially a critical site in which to help facilitate economic revitalization of the overall corridor. The MC zoning is a non-PUD option which permits the existing multi-decade use, and that is, in essence, the auto repair facility. We, as a staff, in analyzing the request, could find no other options in which to achieve the applicant's goal, which would not otherwise burden the property similarly to the plan district, with the uncertainty of a conditional use being offered. The UDC, again, offers these specific use standards that provide landscape buffers and neighborhood protections to reduce the reliance on PD to address the transitional issues that we are identifying. The business is operated here without any knowledge of our staff of complaint by the adjacent neighbors. There has been no general communication to us in support or non-support of the request. Mr. Cardone will speak hopefully to the fact that he has attempted to make and reach out to the Neighborhood Association, and as of the writing and the presentation of this report this evening, we are unaware of his ability to gain a venue with the neighborhood to talk about the proposal here. The PD plan was crafted significantly with their engagement and again has been operated without incident since its revision in 2011. Given the fact that the land use characteristics in the area are mixed, the rezoning would be supportive of the Loop Corridor Plan's objectives of revitalization of the corridor, that we have not had incident with the property operating as it has been, and that we do have additional protections and standards in place, staff would be recommending approval of the plan amendment or the map amendment from PD to the MC Zoning District. We believe that this is consistent with the surrounding land uses and should not in the future create issues as the property either is utilized as it currently exists today or may potentially be redeveloped in the future. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Before we move on to staff questions, I would like to ask commissioners if anyone has had any ex parte prior to this meeting related to this case. Please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of the case in front of us. I see none. Are there any questions for staff? Mann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Zenner. I just want one question. You said there were listed two phone calls with queries of some type. Can you tell me what those phone calls were concerning?
There were more, from what my recollection is, from what Ms. Bacon had indicated, more general inquiries as to what was happening. It was more procedural, not necessarily objecting to or supporting the request at hand.
I just want to say, because we can get this out right now before the rest of this goes forward. Mr. Cardone has been seen as a good neighbor. This is my neighborhood association, and this area has about four activists within about 300 feet of it. Had he not been a good neighbor, we would have heard it, and no one's issued any kind of complaint. I just wanted to get that out there. I don't know why I'm active in the neighborhood association, and this didn't come to us, and I'm not sure why. I'll have to follow up on that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Any additional questions for staff? I see none. With that, we'll open up the floor to public comment. If anyone has any comments, Please come up to the podium and give us your name and address for the record.
My name is Thomas Cardona. I live 4103 Hartfield Drive. I'd like to have the zoning done like the last one I did 6 months ago. And I've been taking care of the building, the landscaping, I do all myself. And everybody around me have zoning MC. AutoZone next to us. We got different zoning from AutoZone. North, all those bars, all those old buildings, they got different zoning, MC. I like to have the same zoning as everybody else around me. So the building, everybody knows, looks good. It's been there for years. We're not going to change anything. It's not going to be for sale. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cardone. Are there any questions for this speaker? Mr. McMahon.
Just real quickly, and I don't mean to step out too much. Mr. Cardone, if you're still interested in talking to the Neighborhood Association, you might want to see me later, and I can make that happen. The Neighborhood Association president is my housemate, and there was obviously some kind of ball drop
there. I was
there.
One time there. I left a note on the door and my phone number, and they never called me back. I tried to find the phone number of the president of the association.
Yeah, I think there's...
I got some information from the city. They didn't have the phone number, and I left a note on the door.
All right, I'll get you a proper phone number, because I don't
have any problem with the neighbors.
Okay. All right, if you
all
still
those
want...
neighbors around me, they know my mechanics. I told them around the block, we test drive the cars. Be real careful, because a lot of kids around there. Behind ours are a lot of little kids, and we want to be safe.
And you're seen as such. Thank you, Mr. Cotto.
Any additional speakers on this case? Seeing none, we will close public comment. Commissioner discussion. Ms. Russell.
Since there's no discussion, I'll make a motion. In case of 99-2020, I move to approve the MC zoning map amendment.
Second.
Second by Ms. Carroll. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, Ms. Burns, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Strodeman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes, ma'am.
8-0, motion carries.
Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. That brings us to case 113-2020, a request by Allstate Consultants on behalf of the City of Columbia for rezoning approximately 139.07 acres from PD, Plan District, to O, Open Space, on property commonly known as A. Perry Phillip Park. The subject property is located at the northeast corner of Gans Road and Bristol Lake Parkway. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, you may, ma'am. This is, if I'm not incorrect, our first request to zone to O. So, and O is not just because I'm excited. It is for open space. We are dealing with a 139-acre tract of land, which, as indicated, is commonly known as A. Perry Phillips. I'm sorry, I left an S out in the title. Park. This is the location, obviously, immediately adjacent to Father Tolton High School, and then is also the location of our city fishing pier on Phillips Lake, as well as our new field house athletic complex on the very northern end of the property. Again, no public information meeting, but we did do early notification due to the COVID-19 epidemic, and postcards were sent out for the early notification, 11 of them, and we advertised for the public hearing on 5/19 with the same 11 property owners receiving notification. As you can see here in the oblique aerial, the 139-acre tract of land, it does have our fishing facility here today. And then this aerial is a little bit old. It does not show the field house up in this particular area here, up off of Phillips Farm Road on the very northern section of the property itself. This property was acquired as a part of, or was zoned plan district in the early 2000s as a part of the annexation and permanent zoning of the Phillips Farm, inclusive of the development that we talk a lot about that is part of Discovery Park there on the east of the project site, and then Bristol Lake subdivision is immediately to the west here in this photograph, and then the Gans Recreation Center property is immediately to the south, and where you see the track, that obviously is Father Tolton High School. So why are we here and why are we rezoning to O? Well, we are attempting to make strides to streamline the future improvement processes for our city Parks and Recreation Department. The rezoning to O and our O district is specifically designed basically for public parks or open spaces. And as such, the uses within the district are somewhat restricted and are consistent really with the objectives of what the city's Parks and Recreation Department would like to do with the property. The public hearing process that currently exists on this property as a plan district is redundant to our park sales tax process that requires a public information meeting with the public by Parks and Recreation, a contract and project approval process through City Council, Council's approval of letting contracts, and then basically the delivery of a park project. We just feel that O reduces that redundancy with no loss to the public's ability to participate in what happens on this public land. The original PUD plan, if you all have been around long enough, and Mr. Strotman may be one of the few, that was approved on this was done in 2009, and it was back with two revisions ago, if I'm not incorrect, of the park master plan shortly after we acquired the park property itself in 2008. And it included the fishing dock, shelter, and the parking area near the current terminus of Bristol Lake Parkway itself. Bristol Lake Parkway is scheduled to be constructed further to the north as a part of future development north of the Bristol Lake subdivision. That is part of a separate development agreement that was approved by City Council and would likely be facilitated if Phillips Farm Road, which is what accesses the field house, is further extended westward to where those two would intersect in order to allow for multiple points of ingress and egress into the park property itself. Subsequent changes to the PD, such as the field house, have been approved as major amendments. And obviously, as our Parks and Recreation partners know, and you as the Planning Commission know, that process can be laborious and very time-consuming, especially when you have to go through other multiple public processes in order to even be able to begin construction. The existing statement of intent that was attached with the staff report conditionally restricted uses within the public, conditionally restricted the use of the property for public park purposes and other non-habitable structures if we were to acquire it. So there were already embedded restrictions to how this property could be developed, and what the city is utilizing it for at this point under the plan district is consistent with those restrictions. The O zoning, however, does open up some additional options, doesn't have the same set of restrictions that the SOI has. It would open it up to potentially the development of schools, golf courses, places of worship, farmers markets, and minor public utility service locations, such as pump houses and substations for electrical purposes that are of small size. It should be pointed out, however, that these uses are generally permitted on any public piece of property, or are permitted in any zoning district, such as our schools and our churches definition. So really, there is not significant difference between having it openly zoned O versus leaving it under the current PD and requiring all the extra process. We're still going to be utilizing it pursuant to the park's master plan, which is as a park. So really, public park features, non-habitable structures on the property. The one difference, however, that the O District will offer to this particular property is the opportunity for outdoor recreation and entertainment uses. There's a significant distinction that we've pointed out in the staff report, and I'd like to make here tonight. Outdoor recreation and entertainment uses in the context of the O District are those that are typically operated by separate commercial entities. They're for-profit, could be a club or somebody that has a membership structure that requires a payment of fees to get in, skeet range or something else, hunt club. The city, while we do have features out here that may be rentable and could be classified as commercial entertainment, are not so. And they're not so because they're operated by the city as a benefit to the public as a whole. We charge fees to cover our operational costs. We are not in the business of making a profit. So it is a significant difference, whereas if this were a private entity asking to have O on here and then wanting to come back and put a skeet range or a golf course or something else, they would require a CUP. The city, on the other hand, if we as a part of our park master plan want to do any of that type of activity, would not be required to get the CUP because it is to benefit the public as a whole. And again, we have similar features on other city properties that are in our zoning districts or other zones that are residential that have the same commercial impacts that would be proposed on this particular piece of land, which has been clearly identified through the park master planning process as being a multi-use facility that may have multiple features. The ice arena has been proposed down here in the past, a water park, and a variety of other things, all of which would be permitted because it is a city entity and a city operation. We don't believe, and we feel that it is appropriate as the first O zoning, as I recall, out of the gate, to be applied to this particular property, given that it does still permit the public engagement processes that the PD does, due to the fact that it is being operated by the Parks and Recreation Department and must go through the capital projects process. And we would recommend approval of the request, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Zenner. Before we move to staff questions, I would like to ask any commissioner who has had any expertise on behalf of this case in front of us to please share that with us so we all have the same information in front of us. I see none. Any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
Clarification question for Mr. Zenner. As you may know, I'm affiliated with Roots and Blues Festival, and we lease from the city to run that operation. What would be the difference? It sounds like we could run it down here. Is there any difference on, say, something that we would do?
I don't believe so. I mean, obviously, it's our city park. You operate Roots and Blues out of Stevens today.
Right.
Stevens, quite honestly, maybe the next park that we take out of its zoning district and drop it into O.
That's, I was kind of wondering what's different here.
It won't have any significant difference. What I want to draw the distinction of is, and the reason for why I belabor that point, is commercial profit-driven entities that want to have an amusement park, want to do something else, but want to put it in O because they want to use it as an opportunity to say, well, we're not going to do any heavy commercial development on the property, no shopping centers, no car dealerships. You're still not going to be able to just operate freely without having to go through an additional process because there's no oversight to you as a private entity. The city has oversight of itself. And that's one reason why, if you're engaging through a city contract to utilize public property, we still probably have a big stick that we can wield.
Just mildly painful, not necessarily large. How about that? Thank you, Mr. Zenner. I just was trying to split some hairs there.
Thanks.
Ms. Burns.
Are fireworks displays allowed in O zoning?
Well, you want to pin me in a corner. Fireworks displays in general are not permitted inside the city of Columbia by any residential property owner. They are prohibited by the general code. Most people that live inside the city realize that and may or may not abide by that law. The city of Columbia, however, as an entity, we shoot fireworks off from downtown in areas that aren't zoned O, aren't zoned for fireworks stands either, probably. So I would suggest no, they would not be restricted from this area. In all seriousness, this particular area, given its relatively lack of population for a broad area, not a limited density of population, I should say, may not be a bad location. And it does provide sufficient space and potentially opportunities for parking to accommodate large crowds.
I was just wondering if maybe that was a potential city site for a fireworks
display. It may be in the future if we have fireworks.
Additional questions for staff? I see none. We will close staff questions and open the floor to public comment. If you can please give us your name and address for the public record.
Brian Harrington with Allstate Consultants at 3312 Lamone Industrial Boulevard. I'm here on behalf of the Parks Department. Gabe Huffington with the Parks Department is here as well if there's any additional questions. That was a comprehensive staff report. I don't think I have anything to add, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you guys have.
Any questions for the speaker? Mr. McMahon.
Just a real quick comment. Not all entities, not governmental entities who come before us bother to send anyone, let alone have staff show up. I just want to say I truly appreciate it because sometimes we have questions, and when there's no one here, it's really hard to get them answered. Thanks for showing up, guys. Really, we appreciate that.
And we usually do have questions. This is an unusual evening, trust me. So
thank you.
Come on, guys, questions.
Fireworks.
People are going to think this is normal for us. Any other public comments? Seeing none, we will close public comment commission discussion.
If none of my fellow...
Whoever raises their hand higher. Mr. McMahon.
Lee and I have already worked this out. If none of my fellow commissioners have any questions in the matter of case 113-2020, I hereby move to approve.
Second.
Second by Mr. Strodman.
Slipped in there.
We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? I see none. Ms. Burns, may we have roll call, please?
Yes. Mr. Strodman?
Yes.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Ms. Russell?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes, ma'am.
8-0, motion carries.
Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council. This brings us to our final case for the evening, case 114-2020, a request by Anderson Engineering on behalf of Discovery Park Apartments, LLC, for approval of the second major amendment to Discovery Park Subdivision Plat 4 PD Plan. The proposed amendment seeks to subdivide the site into two separate lots and obtain approval of a design adjustment from sections 29-5.1 F3 of the Unified Development Code to allow a new lot line through a structure, parking lot. The 12.92-acre property is located on the west side of Nakona Parkway, approximately 1,500 feet south of Ponderosa Street. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Ms. Chairman. Tonight, yes, we are looking at a proposed major amendment to a PD plan. You recently saw this within the last 6 months, too. They had restructured a part of the residential multifamily buildings on the site. The notice for this was impacted by the COVID pandemic, so we didn't have a public information meeting, but postcards were sent out for early notification and was advertised, as it is a public hearing. Here's the overall site. You see the one case we just discussed is directly west of this site, the A. Perry Phillips Park. On the aerial there, you see the four residential structures that are now constructed. And you may recognize this, basically the portion to the left of the blue line there was recently revised and approved by P&Z and City Council. The request tonight is quite simply to take this lot and split it into two separate lots. And to do that, the lot line would then be created where the blue line is, which would travel through planned and some existing pavement currently. And that, again, is not permitted per the UDC and requires a design adjustment. The brown shaded area there than is actually an access easement, again, that is necessary to provide the access for each lot to access the parking spaces on either side. So basically, it is an access easement over the drive aisle, because if not for that, you probably would not be able to access the parking spaces without crossing a lot line, which is kind of the important part here. So, again, the request is not to reconfigure anything on the site, just to create the new lot line. And again, when we look at these types of situations, what we're looking for is a lot line that doesn't create some undue burden on the management of the site. So this is down through the middle of the drive aisle. So with the inclusion of the access easement, to make sure that access into and out of the site is permitted. We determine that to be a reasonable location for that site. The thing to point out here is that the location of this lot line does disperse the existing parking unevenly now on each lot. The site as a whole, one lot, had the minimum amount of parking necessary. However, the location of this lot line will split the parking spaces unevenly so that the lot to the right, 401A, has less than the minimum. Lot 401B to the left will have more than the minimum. To address this issue, they have included a note on there that the site will still operate with a basically shared parking arrangement so that all spaces within both lots are accessible to all residents. Therefore, you will have a situation where it will still operate as it does as one lot. The access easement still is necessary to ensure that the spaces that are necessary to meet the minimum for 401A on the right, that they can physically access the additional spaces. But the note goes a little bit further and states that basically the entire site will operate as one parking system. With that being said, we did find that the standards for the design adjustment were met. No reason to recommend denial of that. So we're recommending approval of the PD plan amendment with the associated design adjustment to 29.5.1F3. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Before we move to staff questions, I'd like to ask any commissioners who has had any ex parte prior to this meeting related to this case to please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. Seeing none, are there any questions for staff? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Smith, thank you. What happens when this separate parcel gets sold and the neighboring landlords don't get along?
Well, that is exactly the concern that is meant to be addressed by the easement. So the easement does provide access to either owner to basically cross the other owner's property to access.
And this travels with the plat, then?
Correct, yeah. The easement
didn't sit here in 20 years, someone else sitting here going, I can't park.
The easement is a private easement. It's between those two owners, so it would become somewhat of a civil matter at that point, but that is the requirement of the UDC, is that we require that an access easement in some form be applied to the site.
I just wanted to bring it up, having seen these things
languish
in court. Thank you very much.
Any additional questions for staff? Seeing none, we will open the floor to public comment. Please give your name and address for the record.
Good evening. I'm Tom Wooten with Anderson Engineering. 4240 Phillips Farm Road is our office. I am here on behalf of the owner applicant and happy to answer any questions.
You have learned the format well.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you. Any other speakers? I don't see any other public, so we will close the public comment period.
We're trading back and forth.
Commission discussion, Ms. Russell.
I'd like to make a motion. In the case of 114-2020, I move to approve the requested major amendment number 2 to the Discovery Park subdivision plat 4 PD plan and the approval of the design adjustment for 29.5.1F3.
Second.
Second by Mr. McMahon. We have a motion on the floor. Any discussion on that motion? I see none. Ms. Burns, a roll call.
Yes. Mr. Strodeman.
Yes.
Ms. Rushing.
Yes.
Ms. Russell.
Yes.
Mr. Toohey.
Yes.
My vote is yes. Ms. Carroll.
Yes.
Ms. Lowe.
Yes.
Mr. McMahon.
Yes, ma'am.
8-0, motion carries.
A final unanimous vote to forward recommendation to City Council. And we got wrapped up in an hour, 6 cases. I think that's a record, Mr. Zenner.
Madam Chair, please don't encourage Mr. Zenner.
Oh, oh no. I just jinxed us, didn't I? Oh, dear.
Did you ask for public comment?
We were just moving. That closes the case, so the public can leave, so there's no public comments. Are there any additional public comments? I see none. Staff comments?
Brief.
They will be brief. Don't remind me. Your next meeting is the 18th of June. We'll have to make it just as short because I'm leaving for vacation the following day. We are going to have 2 items on that agenda, at least for our main meeting, but we do have a work session at 5:30. The work session will consist of a presentation by Ms. Bacon and other staff as it relates to where we have been and where we hope to be heading with the comprehensive plan update. We will also be bringing forward to you a couple of suggestions as to our public engagement process for boards and commissions and the general public and stakeholders. So please be looking for that as you receive your next Planning Commission packet. There will be some samples as a part of the work session agenda of surveying questions that we will be wanting you to comment on as a part of the work session. So that will be the June 18th meeting, and then we will follow that up with a July 9 meeting, if I am not incorrect, work session for capital for the comp plan as well. We want to continue to move this project forward, so as discussed at our last meeting, that will be what we will cover over the next 2 meetings. Ms. Bacon is gone for the second meeting in July. You may have some homework as it relates to comp plan, but we will then come back with some other topics that we need to talk about at your second meeting in July. So your cases for the June 18th meeting, they are not nearly as meaty, and there aren't nearly as many, but we have 2. We've got a rezoning request from R1 to Ag. This is an anomaly. We don't normally see it going in this direction, and this is actually a piece of property that was recently rezoned, if I am not incorrect, from Ag to R1. So we're almost flipping it back around, and our newest staff member will be hopefully on the dais again to present for you. Brad did a wonderful job this evening. And then another repeat customer that we have coming back, it seems again, is on the 9th at Old Hawthorne. This is a SOI revision that Mr. Smith has previously handled. An issue was identified after we did our last amendment, which had to deal with modifying property lines for the subdivision. And this one deals with setback requirements that were part of the original statement of intent that needed to be addressed to facilitate a change in the product line. So you're familiar with where our properties are. The North Oakland Gravel property, immediately to the southeast of this is where Alpha Hart Lewis School is and Arbor Point Parkway to the southeast. And then, of course, the On the Ninth property here in Old Hawthorne. Bunker Loop is the loop, if I'm not incorrect, that we recently have dealt with. And with this final statement of intent revision, we hopefully will be able to see the development of single-family homes here begin. With that is all we have for this evening, trying to keep it short in an hour and 6 minutes. Anyone want to make a motion?
Commissioner comments.
I have one.
Ms. Russell?
I think I'm going to graduate from kindergarten and move to the main dais next meeting.
I will take that under advisement, Ms. Russell. If Mr. Strohman doesn't mind, I will move him next to the principal, and we will swap seats that
actually
way.
Have a comment.
Okay, I do too.
Okay.
So, Mr. McMahon?
Just real quick to follow up on something we talked about work session, which was the CIP. I mentioned to you all that I had been helping take input from community members both in the city and in the county on how to spend recovery funds. And one of the things I mentioned was daycares, and Ms. Carroll mentioned technology. The other, just to let you guys know and to keep you up to speed and maybe to inform what Mr. Zenner and Mr. Teddy are doing, the other two elements in that were assistance for small businesses and rental assistance. So there were four major prongs. There are many smaller things, but those are the four major pillars, if you will. I just wanted to get that out there for you guys. Thanks.
Any additional commissioner comments? If not, I had one. This relates to a case that came up at the last meeting, case 84-2020, which was a ADU and an R1 on Greenwood. And there were some concerns raised by the public and by Ms. Burns that were also, I think, echoed by Ms. Carroll and Ms. Rushing regarding some of the use of the units. And I believe I, for one, had identified that I thought these were controlled to some extent under the regulations. I just wanted to comment that it became clear after the meeting that these were not controlled, to the point that discussion may have led on the dais, may have indicated. And in digging through my notes regarding the original discussion on the ADU, it appears to me that the intent of ADU and R1 may not be consistent with how it was originally considered. And I would like to re-examine that. I don't know if that's a redirect or, but I think it deserves some additional consideration based on the concerns that have been brought forward with the two cases that have come up with R1 so far, and with the original concerns that were raised in the PZ Commission.
I'll let Mr. McMahon make comment.
Just to revisit, I don't mean to cut anyone off. I know I'm going second in this iteration. I'd like to echo the chair's concerns and let you know that Commissioner Stanton and I have discussed this very thing in the past. We find it problematic. So whatever it takes to revisit, I think we need to revisit.
All right.
And if I may, and Ms. Lowe and I did have a conversation in relationship to this. Obviously, we've had a lot of discussion as it relates to ADUs and how they may be used in different contexts. My comments that were made at the during the discussion of our 507 South Greenwood request were inaccurate, and we have made that statement within the staff report as it is moving forward to City Council, as it relates to the fact that only one of the structures would be able to be rented. That was an factual statement. There is no such regulation in place at this point that would restrict either structure from being able to be legally placed within the rental program, and there is nothing within the code in general that would prohibit that from occurring. I think, as Ms. Lowe and I have exchanged, the difference that we have here is that ADUs in the R1 are a conditional use. And as a part of the conditional use process, the evaluation of particular contextual criteria can be utilized as a basis for applying additional conditions, whereas when you look at an ADU in the R2 or in the RMF zoning district, which are already multiple dwelling unit districts, the opportunity to be able to have two rental units in those environments is generally not seen as problematic because they're multifamily zones. The confusion that existed in my comments had to deal with the fact that we have discussed specifically and explicitly more recently the fact that an ADU could not be utilized as a short-term rental in addition to a principal structure on an R1 lot. And that is where my conflating the regulations and how they would apply came about. With that, I think what we do need to do, if it is the Commission's desire, and we will program in the discussion of how we would like to approach potentially addressing the issue of ADUs in an R1 zoning district being eligible to be rented if the principal structure on that property is being rented, which I will openly tell you at this point, I do not believe that is a discussion that we want to be having. The ability to restrict a property owner's use of a supplemental structure that they have built on their property, if they are not always going to be the owner of that property, is problematic in general. An embedded value to a home or a lot that has an ADU approved on it through a legal conditional use process gets transferred as a part of the sale, and the sale of that property does not always constitute it to be owner-occupied in perpetuity. With that being said, I'm open to discussion and a noodling of ideas as to how we may be able to try to resolve, I believe, the issue that is somewhat vexing, I think, the Commission as to honoring the intent of what the R1 zoning district is meant to be, is more of a residential one-owner occupant type of environment, and offering a ability to have a supplemental structure on the property for family or for other purposes, potentially for rental, but as long as just one is the rental. I don't know how we can structure that language. I think what we need to have a discussion of, however, is amongst the Commission, with a request to Council if they want us to re-engage that in a public process. So as part of a work session, I think we can discuss the issue in general, identify how we would like to go and ask Council, Mom and Dad, for permission, hold our hearing, do whatever we need to do, and then provide it back to them to make that final decision. So that would be my course of action, and I would say that we would potentially be able to bring something like this back either at the end of July, beginning of August, somewhere in that period of time.
Mr. Toohey, and then Mr. McMahon.
I guess the only thing I have an issue with this is I feel like we've already set a precedent in allowing someone to downzone to R1 and then allowing them to come back and request an ADU on that property. So how do we, you know, put the cat back in the bag after we've already done this?
But I think that's the very reason we actually do need to reevaluate, because that person downzoned from an R2, which allowed an ADU without restriction, to an R1, and then went through the arduous process of getting a CUP for an ADU under the belief that it would provide additional restrictions on that model versus maintaining an R2 and just adding an ADU. So for it to not add any additional protections for the neighborhood, I think we're setting up a controversy. I mean, we're setting up a falsehood. And Mr. McMahon, sorry.
I think I'm going where you're going. Do you want to go first?
Well, if I may respond to that, because I think that the issue is the analysis through the CUP process of the capability, the carrying capacity and capability of the subject lot becomes a critical element of the evaluation. An ADU is restricted. It is not equivalent to a secondary full-scale dwelling unit on a property that's zoned R1.
It's not R2,
and that was the point. I just sharing the information, that was the conversation that Ms. Lowe and I shared through an email string. Just because we allow an ADU, it is restricted to 75% of the house size. It is required to meet particular setbacks. It is required to have parking. If none of the standards are met, the fallacy that we are not controlling density or controlling impact, I think, is wrong. We do control impact through the regulatory structure. So to put Pandora back in the box, I don't know necessarily if it's the concern. I think the concern is how do you respect what the intent of the ADU process was viewed for? Was it viewed for the opportunity for a property owner to be able to stay in their primary residence by offering and augmenting the use of their land through a rental unit, but not necessarily offering it for both? But I think, as my statement was made earlier, we can't control what future owners may do with that property. They may be investors. They may invest to own and rent both structures. And that's where I think we get into a sticky wicket in the weeds as to how do you tell somebody in the future that, oh, well, you got a conditional use permit to be able to have your primary structure, because you own it, and the secondary structure as a rental income property, but, oh, no, you can't sell it to somebody that's not going to use it the same way. I don't believe that is our role as a governmental entity. I believe our role as a governmental entity is to ensure that the carrying capacity of the subject site to which that unit is going to be located on is sufficient to fulfill or to support it and not be incongruous with the characteristics or the character of the neighborhood in which it is in. We can't control tenure in our residential neighborhoods. We can control the impact of the building footprints and the bulk that exists on lots. And part of what we've set up within the ADU ordinance is just that, bulk controls to ensure that we are not overburdening potentially a site in relationship to others. The conditional use process provides added leverage by which to make those determinations on a case-by-case basis in the R1 zoning district specifically.
I don't want to get into a full-fledged discussion on this right now. I think I just wanted to introduce it as something I think we do need to have a full-fledged discussion on. So I don't, unless this is simply concurrence that yes, we do need to have this discussion, I think I'd prefer to wait until we have that discussion and all comments can actually be captured as part of that. I'm going to go to Ms. Carroll because you've already spoken.
Certainly.
Mr. McMahon. Ms. Carroll.
Can we confirm that we're going to have a discussion on this? It sounded like that was pending council.
So do we need to vote on that we want this added?
No, I think somebody just needs to remind me towards the end of July, if we haven't already had it on an agenda, that it needs to get on one.
All right.
I honor what you all want. I've expressed my position, but I'm open to listening to suggestions as to how we may be able to modify what we have in order to get, I think, what everybody will be comfortable with.
Letting Pat have the last word tonight with the understanding that this is a continuing discussion. All right. Mr. McMahon, any motions
to that end? Yes, ma'am.
I don't know if it is Mr. Strowman's last night with us. It could be, it couldn't be.
Could be, maybe,
I don't know.
Well,
if it, I don't want to miss out on an opportunity to acknowledge the contributions that he has made to this commission, both as chair and a member. I haven't always agreed with you, Rusty, but I learned a lot from you, and you treated people with respect who came in here, you ran a good meeting, and you were a great commissioner. So I thank you for your service.
And you are our institutional memory at this point. I mean, we are going to lose a couple years with you stepping down. We are sorry to see you go.
Thank you all.
Gain me, though.
I'm just going to let that sit there. To that end, unless my fellow commissioners have something, I move to adjourn.
Thank you.
Is that a second, Ms. Russell? Ms. Russell seconded. We are adjourned.